The following transcribed. This is Tall Tales time. Legends of long ago, stories from the day before yesterday. Settle back in your chair and listen as we spin for you Tall Tales. Tonight, the sailor on horseback, the real-life drama of a Tennessean who was an admiral in the United States Navy and a general in the United States Cavalry. Our story begins in Washington, D.C., in the year 1882. A young newspaper reporter from New York is riding in a carriage, bound for an interview with the man they called the sailor on horseback.
It must be in the next block, driver. A brick house with a grillwork gate. I was almost there, and I still hadn't decided what to call the man I was to interview. Admiral? He had just been promoted to that rank after 42 years in the Navy. But he had breveted a Major General in 1865. Maybe he preferred the older title. Or should I call him Mister? After all, he was on the retired list. I wouldn't have been worrying about the problem at all, except that, well, these Tennesseans have quite a reputation for quick tempers. And who could be more a Tennessean than a man named Carter? Samuel Powhatan Carter. They tell me the family is full of pioneers, politicians, and plantation princes. But why borrow trouble? Let Samuel Powhatan Carter himself tell me.
You're Sloan of Harper's Weekly, I reckon. Come aboard, sir. Glad to have you.
He was 63 years old. Tall, keen-eyed, straight as an arrow. I knew this much about him, that he was born in the village of Elizabethton, Tennessee in 1819. That he went into the Navy as a midshipman in 1840, that he had sailed most of the seven seas, and that when the guns opened up against Fort Sumter on a fateful night in April 1861, Samuel Carter, aboard the USS Seminole off the coast of Brazil, wrote a letter.
I never intended the letter for publication, but I simply had to let my family back in Tennessee know my feelings. And they were strong feelings, sir. My loyalty was to the flag of my country. I'd worn the uniform for 20 years. I was aware of the deep division in my native state, and it hurt me to think of becoming a foe of another Tennessean. But to me, the choice was clear. I stayed with Old Glory, the Stars and Stripes.
You didn't intend the letter to be made public, but it was. Where and how, sir?
All over East Tennessee. You are aware, I take it, of the conflicts of sentiments in Tennessee in those years. In the Great Smokies, where I was born, the mountain men cast their lot with the federal government, and by doing so made it inevitable that battles would be fought on their soil.
You were no stranger to warfare, even then.
The war with Mexico, it was only a few years after I graduated from the Naval Academy. I was aboard a ship of the line, the Ohio, at the fall of Veracruz. Some years afterward, I was aboard the steam frigate San Jacinto in the attack on the barrier forts of the Canton River in China. No, I was no stranger to war.
'Tis of a gallant Yankee ship that flew the stripes and stars, and the whistling wind from the west nor'west blew through the pitch pine spars. With her starboard tacks aboard, my boys, she hung upon the gale. On an autumn night, we raised the light on the old head of Kinsale. It was a clear and cloudless night, and the wind blew steady and strong. As fairly over the sparkling deep, our good ship bowled along. With the foaming seas beneath her bow, the fiery waves she spread. And bending low her bosom of snow, she buried her lee cat head.
I'd been a sailor for half my life at the time of which you speak, Mr. Sloan. But I hadn't forgotten how to ride a horse.
The spark of pride gleamed in his eyes, and I realized what had led Andrew Johnson and other highly influential citizens of East Tennessee to request the presence of the Navy's Lieutenant Samuel Carter in their strife-torn mountain land. His letter, widely published, had made his statement of loyalty to the Union a kind of rallying cry.
They took me off a deck and put me in a saddle. Early in 1861, I was, well, borrowed is as good a word as any, from the Navy for special duty at the War Department. I was happy to escape from the tension and confusion of Washington as soon as possible, and so I welcomed the orders that sent me back to East Tennessee to organize and drill Union volunteers. We fielded a full regiment in less than a month, and began to recruit and train another. Fall came, and then winter, and with them came fighting in Kentucky. We met the Confederates at Wildcat, Kentucky, and beat them. I was breveted Brigadier General of Volunteers. Now, suddenly the news from home became alarming. Southern sympathizers were conducting raiding parties against Union partisans. Confederate troops were in control at Cumberland Gap, and the mountain country was sealed off. You could sense the desperation among the mountain men from Tennessee. Would the state be lost to the Union and those men's homes pillaged and burned because they were not there to defend the territory? Frantically, I wrote letters to Knoxville, to Washington. I know not what will be the next move, but hope most sincerely it may be toward eastern Tennessee. If something is not done, and that speedily, our people will be cut up and ruined. If we had a battery, I believe we could go into Tennessee, and then we could carry arms to our people. I believe we could stay there. Will help ever come.
On top of Old Smoky, all covered in snow, a wind is a-blowing to the valley below. It's raining, it's hailing, the moon gives no light. Your horses can't travel this dark, lonesome night. So sit by the fire then and listen to it burn. There are ghosts in the valley and they long to...
Will help ever come?
The fire of the old man's character was like sparks off flint. He plunged you back into the past and made you live again with him the sad, terrible days of the war between the states.
It's a-raining, it's a-hailing, the moon gives no light. Your horses can't travel this dark, lonesome night. So sit by the fire then and listen to it burn. There are ghosts in the valley and they long to...
I sensed what lay behind his words. It is a terrible thing, I should think, to see the land you love turned into a battlefield, where mounted men ride by midnight on errands of vengeance. The ghosts of the past rode again. The sound of hoofbeats thundered through his words.
They sent my cavalry on a special mission back to the mountain country. 500 miles, half of it through Confederate territory, to cut the railroad between Knoxville and Virginia and blow up strategic bridges.
I believe, sir, that you served as Provost Marshal of East Tennessee for a time.
Yes, under General Ambrose Burnside.
Had conditions improved by then?
Improved? No, Mr. Sloan. If anything, the plight of the mountaineers was worse. Mr. Sloan, picture it. Between 40,000 and 50,000 troops had lived on the land in 4 months. 10,000 horses had chewed up nearly the whole of the forage crop. There were families without a bushel of corn or a pound of meat, actually.
Good Lord.
Livestock had been stolen, fences destroyed, farms left to the weeds. Crowds of people swarmed through my office. Those who wanted to swear allegiance to the Union. Escapees who wanted asylum. Men with complaints against the Army. Soldiers with complaints against the Army. And those who just wanted to get away. anywhere. Just get away.
And you were never called back to the Navy? You spent the whole of the war as a general of cavalry volunteers?
Yes, seems strange, huh? An old sea dog like myself in the saddle far away from the ocean.
It does, sir. Well, certainly there was a heavy responsibility on the U.S. Navy during the war between the states. I wonder you were not recalled.
It might interest you, if an old man's memories are of interest at all, to know that the Navy advanced me to lieutenant commander and then to commander while I was still wearing a brigadier general's star.
Which title do you prefer, sir? The Navy's or the cavalry's?
My choice? Yes, I suppose the question is not at all unnatural. But, Mr. Sloan, I became a general by a twist of history, almost in spite of myself. My choice was our nation's Navy. Every Tennessean, Mr. Sloan, is a volunteer at heart. I didn't have to learn to fight for my country. I learned to love the sea and the ships of the line. That, I think, must be your answer.
Thank you, Admiral Carter. When I came to see you, I didn't quite know how I should address you, and so you've solved the issue for me.
I can see your dilemma. But it's odd, you see, I never for a moment shared the same confusion. Even when I wore a Major General's stars and commanded East Tennessee Cavalry, I always thought of myself as, well, a sailor on horseback.
'Tis of a gallant Yankee ship that flew the stripes and stars, and the whistling wind from the west nor'west blew through the pitch pine spars. With her starboard tacks aboard, my boys, she hung upon the gale. On an autumn night we raised the light on the old head of Kinsale. It was a clear and cloudless night, and the wind blew steady and strong. As fairly over the sparkling deep our good ship bowled along, with the foaming seas beneath her bow, the fiery waves she spread, and bending low her bosom of snow, she buried her lee cat.
I closed the door of the Admiral's home behind me. An old song was running through my mind. I whistled it. I hailed a passing carriage.
Cabby! Hey, cabby!
Samuel Powhatan Carter, Rear Admiral in the United States Navy, Major General of Volunteers, soldier, sailor, gentleman from Tennessee. A unique American, I'd say. A most unusual man.
Up aloft amid the rigging, swiftly blows the favoring gale, strong as springtime in its blossom, filling out each bending sail. And the waves we leave behind us seem to murmur.
You've been listening to Tall Tales, a retelling of famous Southern legends. Tonight you heard the story of a man known to history as the Sailor on Horseback, Samuel Carter of Tennessee, who wore a general's stars and an admiral's hat. Tall Tales is written by Bill Woolsey and comes to you every Tuesday evening at this same time. Admiral Carter was played by Bob Goldman. Sloan played by Henry Sullivan. The ballad singer was George Grice. Tall Tales, produced by Marjorie Cooney, is a presentation of the Department of Special Program Services and comes to you from WSM in Nashville, Tennessee.
Edmund O'Brien and Walter Brennan co-star in Treasure of the Sierra Madre, a story of a bitter fight for gold and a tragic climax. Don't miss Treasure of the Sierra Madre on Lux Radio Theater tonight at 8 on WSM Nashville.